Your point about the world today, it's one of these typical weeks that we've had. A new crisis with the gas lines, a crisis with Israel and Hamas, domestic political issues abound. Nothing's really new. It just kind of changed the storyline and we still see the same things. So given that, what I wanted to do this morning was just take a quick look at the gas cyber crisis. I think it's important for us to kind of think about that. And then I want to take another look at this business with Israel and Hamas, okay? And I know I've talked about this before, but this is important. Over 3,000 rockets have been fired into Israel. The Israelis have responded. It's a major issue. And I want to frame this along the lines of the broader aspects of what's going on in the Middle East, not just about Hamas and Israel. It involves Iran. So I want to do that. Excuse me. And then the next thing I want to do is invite my good friend George Williams, who's been on our show before, to talk about critical race theory. We've been talking about it for a while now. And George's perspective is important, okay? He's a black conservative. He's part of, you know, the Al Gop establishment. He's now going to be the head of their minority outreach for Alabama's GOP. Well, let's see what George says about this, because I think it's important for us to hear his view and how that can help us in countering this insidious race theory that has been promulgated. So that's what I'd like to do this morning. And George will be on at about 10:15. So I've got to kind of hustle to get all of my stuff done. That I'm already late on this.
A lot of work to do.
All right. Well, let's talk about the gas crisis. And I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on this because, number one, the overarching question about cybersecurity has been with us for quite a long time. George Bush addressed it partially after the Department of Homeland Security was put together. But the fact of the matter is, in 2003, when DHS started, it was really focused on what? Counterterrorism, okay, after 9/11. So it's understanding, you know, I can understand how that was their main focus. By the time Obama came into office, and by the time he left, cybersecurity had become a major issue for him, okay? In part because the Chinese, the North Koreans, and the Ruskies had done all sorts of things that you know, created cyber attacks, which were not completely devastating, but they hurt, and they showed the vulnerability, not only of our government, but of private places, okay? So the feeling with the Obama folks was, we've got to move in a different direction, and they passed legislation in 2015, which essentially took us down the road of trying to deal with this in a more comprehensive way, okay? The question before the House here is, well, why didn't all that work? And I think that the short answer is a combination of things, okay? Number one, lack of funding. There wasn't enough money for it. Number two, I don't think Obama really took seriously the threat from places like Russia. And when he said that there was no Russian, you know, interference in the 2016 election, he was wrong about that, okay? That was a political statement he made to defer criticism, okay? But the fact of the matter was, there was Russian interference. And it wasn't along the lines of what, you know, the Democrats claimed was Trump's collusion. It had everything to do with Hillary Clinton working through the Russians to gain disinformation with the famous Steele dossier. Steele was working with Russian, you know, operatives, and they put together this fantasy piece of work. So yes, okay, there are those issues there, okay? Secondly, in terms of the whole question about gasoline, comes into, well, what is Biden really trying to do with pipelines? We have pipelines that are old. We have pipelines that that are still necessary. And the first thing he did in office was to do what? Cancel the Keystone Pipeline. Now, we can argue that the degree to which these pipelines are still critical is very real. But the real question is, it is Obama. He's pulling all the strings. But the fact of them is, Biden doesn't really want any kind of fossil fuels. So don't you think it's in their interest to see things like this go on? Because they have to make the American public pay the price because of our dependence upon fossil fuel. Whereas under Trump, what we were trying to do was finally gain energy independence, which is a Nixon proposition from 1972 after the first oil embargo. So think about it. We were able to attain worldwide supremacy and energy independence under Trump, and it's all going away. So we're going to have to pay close attention to what's going on with all this. But I do think that the reality is they are not inclined to look towards fossil fuels as a solution to anything. And as such, we are all in danger of having the kinds of things that you see in California with brownouts and all the rest of that. Excuse me. We'll talk more about that down the road. But now let me just shift quickly, since I've got a couple of minutes before George is going to call, to this whole question about Israel and the Arabs. Let's put this into proper perspective, okay? First of all, there has been this historic enmity between the Muslims and Israel, okay? And the fact of the matter is, after World War I, after the peace agreement, the Arabs were able to take the lead in Palestine, okay? And the Mufti of Jerusalem, a virulent anti-Semite, led pogroms and killings of Jews. This is in the 20s, okay? Long before anything that we've seen today, okay? The Mufti goes to Berlin during the war. And you say, why did he do that? Because he wanted Hitler to win, because if Hitler won, the Jews would have been further exterminated beyond what Hitler was able to do. The bottom line to me is that you have this anti-Semitism that is well-rooted in the Islamic tradition, particularly in that area, and the Muslim Brotherhood, which is a follow-on to the Mufti, essentially moved down the same road of, you know, trying to destroy the Jews, okay? So that's the historical picture that you're dealing with, in my view, okay? Now you've got a situation with Hamas that came to power in 2005 under the George Bush administration, pushing for elections in Gaza, which is this area that the Palestinians were living in as a result of the 1947 UN treaty, okay? Hamas, it was a terrorist group, is a terrorist group, and the argument has always been that how are the Israelis going to deal with a terrorist group that wants to destroy them? It's that simple, okay? So the historical framework along the lines of what I've suggested to you linked to the contemporary problems of the Iranians who have wanted to destroy Israel and are supporting Hamas and the other terrorist group there that basically are saying, we are going to destroy Israel. There is no two-state solution here. That is the major problem. American liberals continue to think that somehow there's going to be a two-state solution. How are the Israelis supposed to live with a state next to them that wants to destroy them? They already are having major problems, as we saw in 2014 with the, quote, tunnel war. At that time, I was teaching my war on terror class at Tulane. And my point to those students at the time was, Netanyahu should just liberate the Palestinians from Hamas's control. Hamas doesn't care about the people. What they care about is using those people in a way to get power and to keep power and to make sure that Israel is destroyed. That's all this is about. That was a golden opportunity for Netanyahu to just liberate those the Gazan people who are the Palestinians. They didn't do it. They just took care of the business and did what they had to do. The same thing is happening today, though. 3,000 rockets have been shot, and many of them destroyed, but some haven't. And this is the first time that we've seen Hamas rockets that are, again, supported by, you know, the Iranians. They're the ones that give Hamas these rockets. Some of them got through. And therein lies the problem. That's probably... Yeah.
Good morning, WABF.
Yeah, good morning. This is George Williams for Dr. Luce.
Good morning, sir. You are on the air.
Good morning, George. How you doing?
Good morning, Doc. How you doing there?
I'm doing good. I just finished talking about the Arab-Israeli business, and I'm going to have to come back to it next week. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, this is an opportunity, I think, for Netanyahu to finally liberate the Gazans from Hamas and the PLO, and we'll just have to see what develops after that. But I'm so glad you're here this morning, George. I mentioned earlier in my introduction that we wanted to talk about critical race theory, and I think that, you know, you are one of these individuals that has to be heard on this issue. And I say that in part because the audience may not know your full story, but the fact of the matter is that, you know, your family left Mobile to flee segregation. You yourself grew up in New Jersey, served in the Marines in Vietnam, went into the Army Reserve, where you retired as a major from that, and then you served as a DA. I always get this wrong. It's not Department of Homeland Security, but you are a. Well, tell me, George, what was it that you did in your military? I mean, your police field, going to, where was it? Africa and Brazil to serve.
Yeah. Initially, after getting off of active duty, I was I joined the Army National Guard, and I was a police officer in Paterson, New Jersey. And after my about 7 years, I was a police officer in uniform, so I understand what's going on the street around these different cities. And then I joined the DEA.
There you go,
DEA. And stationed in New York. At the New York DEA office, and then I was assigned to our Brazil office in Brazil. And I spent almost 6 years in Brazil, in South America.
Well, and, George, I mean, you certainly have that career background, which is so important because you've had experiences in the real world that really give you the insights that are necessary, I think, for political leadership. And I mentioned that you are now going to be leading Alabama GOP's minority outreach program. And to that point, George, this question of critical race theory has come up. And we see what's going on with the premise of it being that the whites are never going to be anything other than racist, that essentially race has been a substitute for class warfare along the Marxist lines. And they're making it possible for, you know, all of the progress, I would argue, from the 60s and Dr. King's movement to be undone simply on the basis of trying to, you know, create havoc in this country, because this is what the Marxists have wanted forever. So, George, what can you say about critical race theory and the degree to which your circle of influence, those folks that you work with, trying to build up the Republican Party's base in the minority community, how are they receiving this?
Well, first of all, there's nothing true about it, okay? And it's a Democratic plot in order to get voters to come into, especially minority voters, to come into the Democratic Party. That's all it is. And they're doing this more and more. And you mentioned the fact that if you're white, you're racist. Well, I'm black, and the Democrats call me a racist. Okay, so it's not a thing of color; it's a thing of if you're a Republican, you're a racist, and we have to fight that and tell them their lies and get some guts and fight it. And this theory is nothing but a Democratic plot in order to to get a vote. So that's my feeling about it.
Well, George, let's just address then the question of, you know, the root causes of what has been the historical problem within the black community, okay? The, you know, discrimination and those sorts of things. The argument that they're making is that it still goes on, and therefore the only solution is a radical surgery. And that radical surgery involves, you know, suspending private property, redistributing seized land and seized bank accounts. I mean, that is the Marxist approach to this. And yet, you know, look at how extensive it has become in terms of the military today. George, we just had some lieutenant colonel who was fired from the Space Command for writing about, and critically writing about, this whole business of critical race theory. We've seen how private companies are inculcating these kinds of programs. We've seen how the government, even, I think I may have sent you the letter that Florida Congressman Michael Walsh wrote to the head of the United States Military Academy at West Point, how he could not believe that they brought this radical left Emory professor up there to talk about, you know, critical race theory, when the whole idea behind the Army is to be able to work together in a unified team to win the battle. And all they're doing is undermining the unity of the armed forces. So how do we reach out to make sure people understand that, you know, this isn't just you and me and a couple of cranky old people saying, oh, this is bad. It's quite real, and it's growing.
Well, one thing is doing what we're doing now, talking about it and challenging them and calling them liars, because it's nothing but a bunch of lies. And we have to, you know, and I've said this before, Doc, we have to get guts and say, you're lying, prove it. And they can't prove it. It's just allegation upon allegations, and we just have to call them out on it. And that's what I do. I do it all the time. I challenge them.
Right.
And we keep talking about it. And that's the only thing we could do, Doc.
Well, you know, along those lines, I know I've said on this program, and I've said it on your program too, that when you look at what has transpired in terms of race relations since the 60s, it's pretty clear that the glass is half full rather than half empty. Now, you and I can say, well, yeah, I agree with that. But there are people who are going to say, well, really, the glass is half empty and nothing's really changed. But my answer to that is basically, well, in 1960, you had about 1,000 blacks who were elected officials. Today, it's over 12,000, which indicates that there was a political revolution as far as the 60s went in terms of the civil rights movement. So, I mean, that sort of an argument makes sense to me, along with, on the social revolution side of things, is this whole question of, in 1970, you had about 250,000 interracial marriages. Today, it's over 5 million. 17% of all marriages today are interracial. So, George, how do these people stand there and tell us we're all racist if mixed race marriages are becoming more and more prevalent? I just don't get this.
Well, you know, Doc, a lot of this have to do with, and I've said it before, and I keep saying that we have to challenge them. And my son is biracial. Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's all a bunch of lies, and we have to challenge them on it. That's the only thing we could do. We have to keep challenging them. And until we do that, until Republicans get some guts and say, hey, that's it, enough is enough, you know. But one thing we have against us is the media, okay, the liberal media. I mean, they keep printing this stuff, and it's going into the minority neighborhoods, and a lot of them are believing it. But I'm telling you, things have changed now because of the way this Biden administration have operated, and we are getting a lot of blacks coming over to the Republican Party because they're upset with this current administration. They've only been in office 4 months, Doc.
Right.
So that's what we have to do.
Well, let me ask you this. The political argument you're making is that the Biden approach is different than the Trump approach. Trump reached out to blacks, Asians, women, Hispanics, and it paid off in terms of how he was able to bring about a very successful economic growth that benefited all of those groups. And at the same time, what has taken place, it seems to me, is that there is a degree of loyalty to Trump and his approach to things. I personally don't understand how the Biden approach is going to be successful in the minority community when they're going to be welcoming in hundreds of thousands of illegals who are just going to take jobs that the lower classes of within the minority community are going to be really kind of kept out of. I mean, is that a message that sells in your view?
Well, you have to understand what this administration is doing now. They're paying people off for not working, okay?
Yeah.
And that's going to be coming to an end soon because employers are realizing they can't get people to work right now, okay? And I've talked to a lot of minorities regarding the what they're doing down at the border. I worked the border for 3 years as a DEA agent.
Right.
And I can tell you that they're not happy with what's going on with the gas situation. Everything in the market has gone up tremendously.
Right.
So it reminded me of the Doug Jones situation when Doug Jones won the election with Roy Moore. We had 2 years of Doug Jones, and people got tired of it. So
right.
In 2022, I'm making this prediction. We are going to take back the House and the Senate because of what the Democrats are doing. So every day that goes by, more and more people are disappointed and angry at this administration.
Well, I cannot certainly understand that, and I, I'm certainly hoping that you're right about this, but getting back to critical race theory, it seems to me that the normal political process is going to be what is going to save us in terms of 2022. Meanwhile, this critical race theory is just spreading like wildfire, and Trump had tried to put a stop to it, and then he did, and then Biden immediately overturned that. Some of our states are going after it and making sure that, it is not implemented. But what is your sense within the Alabama Republican Party? Are they going to come out and speak against it? I asked Jackie Ziegler to come out against it at the school board meeting last Thursday. I have not had a chance to talk to her about that. But the fact of the matter is that if we don't have the levers of power going after this, and you are now part of that power-broking, institution of ALGOP, what is your take on that in terms of whether or not they are going to be willing to come out and say something about it?
Well, it takes someone like me who's, I was born in the 40s, okay?
Yeah.
And I was in Alabama for 10 years before we moved to New Jersey. So I remember not being able to ride in the front of the bus, et cetera,
right.
et cetera, and not being able to go downtown to the restaurant down there. I remember those days.
Yeah.
And things changed when I went to New Jersey. And I came back here at the end of 2005. And, of course, in 2008, I was the senior vice chairman of the Alabama Republic Party. I've traveled all over Alabama.
Yeah.
All over, every nook and cranny. I've never been confronted with any racial epithets,
Right.
So we just have to keep talking, Dr. Liu, and keep challenging them. And people like me, I'm doing it, who has experienced, racial injustice when I was younger.
Right.
And I don't experience it now. And so we have to keep talking about it and keep challenging the Democrats and calling them liars And on radio shows like yours and on my radio show, we bring that out. So a lot of people listen to our shows, and they're realizing that this propaganda from the Democrats is not true. And that's my take on it.
Right. Well, let me just ask you this. In terms of getting the Alabama Republican Party to come out in full force with public statements, you know, saying that, as you just said, this is all a bunch of lies. We've got the proof that this country has, in fact, moved forward on race relations. And like I said, there's all sorts of indicators of a social and political revolution that certainly points to the facts that we're saying. But will they do it? I mean, George, at our tax day rally 2 weeks ago, you basically said, have the courage to stand up, to tell people, you know, the truth, and if they call you a racist, too bad, like you mentioned it earlier. But, I mean, it's easy for us to say this, but what about the establishment, you know, GOP folks who may not necessarily have our courage and our will to do this? I mean, where are they? And have you talked to them about getting public statements out so that everyone knows that the Republican Party is full court press against this critical race theory?
Well, I think after this situation in Georgia and Arizona and some of those states after this election, the party here in Alabama finally realized, hey, something has gone on.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
And it's nothing but a bunch of propaganda. Okay. So and you think someone like myself and the head of the Alabama Minority GOP to talk to the Alabama Republicans, and I think we become very complacent. Okay, because Alabama. Georgia used to be like Alabama, but with all that voting corruption, things
right.
could change. So I think it opened up the eyes of the Alabama Republican Party leadership.
Right.
And guys, we've got to go out and we've got to make sure we have minorities in our upper rank. And we're getting our first black Republican House member. And I think it's in June they're going to have that election. This is the first in Alabama history of a black
right.
Republican. Everything is being geared towards it, black Democrats, okay? And
right.
and I can tell you another thing, Doc. We black Republicans are going to file a class action lawsuit against the Democratic Party for racism against black Republicans. So that's another issue that
right.
we could talk about later on down the road.
Right. Well, George, we're about running out of time, but I really want to thank you for coming on and you know, talking about a sensitive topic, obviously, but one that, as you say, has got to be called out if we are going to prevail in the public opinion square, where so many things do, in fact, you know, take place. So, George, really appreciate your time and efforts, and we'll be talking to you again soon. George, take care.
All right. Thank you, Doc. Anytime.
All right. Sure. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, Mark, once again, a very fast 35 minutes or 30 minutes.
Yes, it was.
And we
barely scratched the surface.
Exactly. I mean, I know that Lori keeps saying this should be an hour, but and maybe it will be one of these days, but
maybe
we'll
so.
See how it goes. But to everyone out there, you really need to get in touch with your state representatives and your federal representative. Jerry Carl needs to hear from District 1 about your feelings about this. And all of our state officials need to understand that we do not want re-education camps going on, you know, in this state about white supremacy. I mean, the fact that these people can say that, you know, whiteness is akin to the KKK. I mean, that is absolutely wrong, and it's wrong on the face of it, and it's wrong historically when you see what I've just suggested to you in terms of a social and political revolution that has taken place because Dr. King led it, and many white people understood it and got behind where he was going. And the result has been absolutely incredible, particularly in light of world history and how other places have not been able to deal with these kinds of differences that could have led to, you know, worse bloodshed. So on that note, let me wrap it up. I'm a minute late, and I know Lori's going to be looking at that clock and saying, come on, Lou, yep, wrap it up.
I got to get out of here.
Not to get out of here. All right, I'm out of here. See you next week. Take care. God bless.
This has been the Conservative Watchdog Weekly Review, brought to you by Kevin Spriggs Enterprises. And you've been listening to Dr. Lou Campominosi with the Common Sense Campaign, adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. If you missed part of the show and want to tell a friend, you can listen later on WABF1480.com. And Kevin Spriggs Enterprises features the Shell stations in Malbus at Highway 98 and Highway 90 and their state-of-the-art car wash, so be sure and check that out. We now get back to more great music and memories right here on 1480 WABF.
Listen for the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, paid talk show, Monday mornings at 10:05 with Dr. Lou Campominosi.
It's nuts. It's not science. It is just politics, and that's all it is.
Listen live online or on the radio, or pull it up later on our new website, WABF1480.com.